Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Maloney and Fourier.
Ugh, I hate Almond Joy.
Jeez, it kind of breaks it all down. What's your favorite candy?
Whatchamacallit?
What?
Oh, my God, don't. No, we're not doing it.
The Celtics season's underway, and Fourier's already swooning over a certain someone.
Oh, big finish, Williams!
Media will go better than the Marcus Smart love affair.
Aren't you tired of everything that involves Marcus Smart?
The Pats are feeling good about a blowout win over the Jets. Yachts,
they're warming.
But are things as cheery as they seem?
Maybe it wasn't as tight an operation as they expected it to be.
It's Lou.
What kind of brother break?
It's Christian.
Good job, guys. High five.
It's Maloney and Fourier on WEEI.
All right, fourth and final hour.
High five.
The Maloney and Fourier coming at you.
Hey, for your great 3 hours, Lou. High five. You did great. High five. It's a random Tuesday.
You're
good
supposed
job.
To give me the dog barking.
I feel like we have to reintroduce it.
Oh, okay.
We have to reintroduce that around 5:30 or so.
We'll do that at 5:30.
Because we're all about the noon improved Boston Celtics.
We do have to talk about the Celts. A little overtime victory last night against the Charlotte Hornets. Their first loss of the season. They beat the Nets the night before, so it was the second night of a back-to-back. But still, Celtics win this one 140-129. And for a while there in the fourth quarter, I thought it was going to go down the same road that we saw way too often last year. There was, you're sort of watching it early in the year trying to think, okay, I want to see signs that things are going to be different.
Yeah.
And I would say before last night's game, I know they had to win against Houston. I didn't see signs. And it's like, I want to see it get better.
Houston is the Jets.
Yes. But it's like, I want to see certain things. Mm-hmm. I want to see things get better in certain parts of the game or whatever it might be. And I think you kind of saw it a little bit. I mean, it's early in the year, but still good things to see, I think, late in the game actually pulling this game up.
Yeah, I think ultimately you're trying to see, okay, new philosophy, new attitude, new points of emphasis. And I think last year's team, that ended up as a 500 team, it seems like they, when it really mattered, they couldn't close out games. They didn't make the shot when they needed to. Too many isolation opportunities, guys like trying to play hero ball. So last night, totally different. Nice little comeback.
Got a little bit of it.
They get that into overtime. And then they won the game in overtime. And so I'm going to go to a post-game comment by Marcus Smart. Because if you're looking for a clue as to what they were thinking about as players and coaches and what they really wanted to achieve this year, this is a nice little indication of what was going on and how they feel about things so far.
It's showing our growth. I don't know if last year we would have been in that situation. 9 times out of 10, we probably would have folded. And that just shows, the growth that we were showing as teams, as individuals. Things don't go our way. We didn't put our heads down and pout. We got back and we came and we took it from them, in the end when it mattered.
See, to me, that's huge because 9 times out of 10, you think you would have, you had already convinced yourself that you were going to lose 9 times, not 50%, not 5 out of 10, 9 times out of 10, you guys already knew you would have screwed it up and lost the game or lost to a team that you probably should have won.
He's probably right.
To me, that's insane. To me, that's a, holy cow, was it that bad? It was that bad last year. And really, and that's what a talented team that ends up 500, they can't win the close games. They can't win the inside 4 minutes, 8 minutes. Because what I see with all these NBA games and all these players, especially in the regular season, is the first 3.5 quarters, nobody's really putting out 100% effort. Everyone's just kind of going through the motions. And, yeah, they're trying, but the real work starts inside 8 minutes. Go back and look at last year's games, the games that they lost, playoff games. They lost inside 8 minutes when the plays needed to matter, when they needed to play really good defense, you know, get a steal, make an important shot to make the difference. They did that last night.
To me, it's like, you know, this was like a one-point game in the fourth quarter, early in the fourth quarter. And then they turned into last year's Celtics. Because then I just saw, like, you know, Smart missed a three-pointer. Jason Tatum missed three-pointer. Schroeder missed three-pointer. You know, Jabari Parker missed three-pointer. And next thing you know, you turn around, they were down 12. And I'm like, this is how it is.
You know, you were texting us about that.
Yeah, they get in the fourth quarter, and it's like, you know, all right, listen, we're going to start chucking up threes, and if we hit them, we'll win the game. But if we don't, because we're not the greatest three-point shooting team out there, I mean, of course Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum can, but again, I just mentioned like Parker and Schroeder and Marcus Smart chucking up threes. And next thing you know, if you don't hit them, you're down 12. And last year, they were lost that game by 16 or 18 or 20. Because they would have just kept chucking up threes. And if they don't hit them, now all of a sudden a 12-point game turns into a 14-point game. And it's like desperation basketball. And you're like, what are you guys doing? And then all of a sudden there was like a timeout. And the next thing you know, Jaylen Brown to the basket. Jaylen Brown to the basket. You know, Jason Tatum to the basket. You know, fast break. Jaylen Brown dunk. You know, it's everybody all of a sudden, Schroeder taking it to the basket. Everybody started taking it to the basket and playing defense on the other end. And you're like, holy smokes. Maybe something clicked. Maybe a message is being sent that we can't live in the three-point arc when it's a tight game because everybody wants to hit that three and everybody celebrate and go nuts and talk about how, I always felt like the contested three, the double-team fadeaway three is taking over for the dunk. You remember like 15, 20 years ago, you know, the dunk was always like the great play, right? And now it's like what gets everybody going is this like fadeaway double team three where you're like, oh my God. Or don't just take it at the line. Take it 5 feet past the line, in front of the line, right? Make it an even tougher shot and an even longer shot. And if you hit that, we'll praise you. Even though you're only shooting 25% from that spot, no big deal. But when you hit one, we'll celebrate. So I felt like it was a different look. It was attack the rim, play defense. And that's why you got back into that game again. Like, it was a good thing.
Well, again,
and Marcus Smart's 100% correct. They lose that game. That's why you're 500 team.
No, yeah. And I feel like I saw some growth in him just with him not shooting the ball at the end of the game, like calling a timeout or passing it off during those crucial moments. That's what I really want to pay attention to. Like, inside 8 minutes, when the game is in doubt, where is Marcus Smart? God love him. Nobody works harder. Nobody's a bigger influencer, you know, to pissing people off than Marcus Smart. There's a place for him. It's needed. He's the heart and soul of the team. I get it. Yes, cosign. He shouldn't be taking shots at the end of the game, not with all the high-level talent that you have this team.
He's good.
He shouldn't be the guy. The hard part is convincing him or proving to him that he has to concede. He has to pass it off.
Well, listen, he's going to, and we're going to get to that sound quick. But first, I want to play Ime Udoka after the game talking about, because, you know, the Hornets had the ball here, and Marcus Smart got that steal that took that last possession. This was Ime.
I said it to the group in there. I said, I don't care about the 41 and the 30 from you guys. Marcus, play of the game, you know, taking that last shot away from them. And so he does all the little things. He does so much that doesn't show up in the box score. But we know the toughness and the heart and soul of our team comes from him.
See, I kind of disagree with Ime because if it wasn't for 41 and 30, then that would have been a meaningless steal because they would have already been down 12, 15. This is why we talk about Marcus Smart, like, you know, trading Marcus Smart. Like, he's got to go to a contender because his style doesn't play on a losing team. He's going to give you these great defensive plays, but he's going to go, you know, 3 for 12 on the floor and 1 for 9 from three. And because of that, they're going to be down 15. So these meaningful steals in the fourth quarter aren't so meaningful. But you had a guy to put up 41. You had a guy to put up 30. So you're on a better basketball team where these plays actually mean something. But still, this is Marcus Smart at his best. Like, last night's game was Marcus Smart. Like, this is that defines his career here. You hate him because he goes 1 for 9 from threes and he just keeps shooting, but you love him because he steals the ball at the end of the game and you get into overtime and win the game.
Yeah, I mean, I hate when I'm forced to devalue his importance to this team because I don't think it's, I just want him to just recognize the situation, you know, and then I also want Ime Udoka to somehow try to cultivate some sort of awareness with the rest of the team and understanding as far as what your role is. I get it. Sometimes he's going to have to shoot. Like, listen, he's earned the right to shoot. But when? That is the key part for me.
This is a problem that I'm seeing, a pattern, and it seems like a philosophy. So And Celtics fans, you've seen this a lot. Late in games, you know, isolation basketball with Jason Tatum. And if you always look for Jaylen Brown, where is he? He's in the corner. Just hanging out in the corner. He's not even on the wing. You know, going to, you know, Tatum going to his side. He's actually on the opposite corner most of the time, late in games, late in halves, late in quarters, whatever. You get a final shot. And he's just sitting in the opposite corner. So last night, finally, somebody asked Ime, because it happened last night. I think it was the end of regulation, whatever it was. You know, why is Jaylen Brown on the opposite corner? And it's a two-man game between Tatum and Brown.
Yeah, well, they have their best defenders most of the time. I mean, not just tonight, but every game they're going to have their best defenders on those two guys. So we wanted to pick on Ball late in the game there. If it wasn't Ball, we wanted to put Hayward in it. Those are the guys we were picking on. We put a lot of small pick and rolls. It was either Dennis or Marcus setting it, and we wanted to try to take advantage of Ball. If we involved Jaylen, it'd obviously be two of the best guys, probably Bridges. And our plan was to pick on Ball, use our size, and hopefully they helped and we could kick the ball and get some open shots.
So I appreciate the explanation, right? And Kelly Oubre was probably on Jaylen Brown at the time. So I understand. And I like the fact that he's just coming out in a regular season game and saying, yeah, we're picking on LaMelo Ball and Gordon Hayward. Like, we're picking on him. Like, that's just want to let you know, offensively, we're going to pick on them.
Yeah.
So I think that's good. I just hate the philosophy.
You hate everything about it. The fact that they're playing this pick and roll, Marcus Smart taking and being
so
open.
You play this two-man game to try to get a bad defender, LaMelo Ball, right? So you can switch it up or something on Tatum. But what do you think happens? Like, you're the other coach. Like, it's a two-man game. What do you think you're going to do when Tatum gets the ball?
Well, I mean, obviously, you're going to end up double-teaming him
the other bad defender or whatever, right? So who does that leave open?
Oh, geez.
Marcus Smart. So you're creating a two-man game late in the game knowing the result. And the result is Marcus Smart's the open guy. Like, or Tatum forces it, you know, double-team, which we know he does, right? So he either forces it. And it's not the greatest shot. And then he complains to the ref because he didn't get fouled. Or he kicks it out to Smart and he clanks a three-pointer at the end of the game and you either lose or you go to overtime or whatever it is.
Smart time.
And to me, it's like, I understand you have the best two defenders. You know, Bridges and Oubre close together because it's Jaylen and Jason Tatum. But to me, at least you could have Tatum one-on-one with Bridges. You know, because if Oubre leaves him to double-team him, then now you've got Jaylen Brown all by himself at the three-point line. I feel good about that. But if Oubre doesn't want to leave Jaylen, now, Jason Tatum, your best score is at least one-on-one. Like, you are creating late shots for Marcus Smart by having this philosophy. We all know they're going to double-team Tatum. We all know that Marcus Smart's going to be wide open. They're not going to defensively rotate. They're going to actually look at him and say, go ahead, I dare you. And he's going to chuck it up, and he's going to go 1-for-9 from three.
Yeah, but there's other like rotations that you can have with that type of situation. I think my original inside 4 minutes – crunch time, got to have a type of situations when it goes possession, timeout, dead ball, whatever, they take it out and they basically run a half court play. Take him off the court during an offensive possession, an important offensive possession, so that way the other team cannot play to your weakness, which is him shooting an open shot. Then if you make it, then put him back on the defense.
It was an awful inbounds pass. Hey, we got a hand on it. 8 seconds left when we got the ball back. Didn't even get a shot.
Yeah.
I didn't even get a shot. So, but still, I like the way it went.
You know who I like? You know who I'm really liking? Here's who I think is a future star. I think Time Lord is a future star.
If you can stay healthy.
No, I know. Obviously, that's key. But when it comes to energy, I like everything about him. Like, you know, shot blocking. He's always around the ball. He's always causing havoc. He's always kind of around something that makes a difference. So, you know, all the lobs that he does, he can jump out of the gym. But listen, if he stays healthy, he's going to be a big reason why you make the playoffs and advance in the playoffs. If he can stay healthy, yeah. It's always been the biggest issue with him is staying on the court for some reason or another.
They're gambling on him. They gave him the contract. He's got to stay healthy because we've seen what he can be like when he's on the court. He had 12 last night with 16 boards.
He's great. I think he's such an impactful player.
Six offensive rebounds.
Yeah.
For a team that it seemed like for years don't even believe in offensive rebounds. He had six of them. No, it was good. It was a fun game.
Of course, Horford was not there.
It was a fun game. You know, Tatum, Brown doing his thing. Like, it was funny. Last night after the game, I was like Forsberg talking about Tatum and starting to recognize when he needs to take over the games. And I felt like that's not it. Like, I think he's always felt like it's time to take over the games. It's like for him, it's like realizing when it's not time to force it. You know, to force it. Like, I look at Brown, I look at Tatum, and the difference to me is I don't see Jaylen Brown taking as many bad shots and forcing his offense like I do Tatum. And I know he's a great scorer. But to me, that's another you know, step he needs to make. Like, yeah, he's a great player, and he, you know, but he forces it too much. Well, the dribbling and the double teaming and trying to make this great one shot. Well, I feel like Jaylen, he'll make a move, and if they close it up on him, he'll kick it out. Like, he's not perfect. But I feel like Jaylen Brown takes better shots more consistently, and Tatum forces things up still, as great of a scorer he is. No, and even at 8 assists, he was great last night, but it's still there with him.
Yeah, 140-129. How about some defense?
I don't worry about defense. They don't play defense in this league.
Noel last night, that's why.
Noel, nobody protected the rim.
I mean, how can you expect? It's amazing that they were able to win without this guy. You know what I mean? Like,
his presence is felt.
No glue?
Yeah, I mean, how do you survive without your glue? Like, what keeps it together? You know what I mean?
Marcus Smart. You know what? The heart and soul. You have the glue, and then you have the heart and soul.
So the heart and soul and the glue.
Yeah, one of the you can't thrive without both. One or the other, sure. One of the two, yes.
Was he on the bench last night?
Who, Al?
Yeah.
Probably. Another coach, yeah.
Well, I'm just saying, like, so even when the guy doesn't play, he impacts the game. I mean, let's face it. I mean, the knowledge is tremendous. The leadership is off the charts. You know, so even when he doesn't play, he's still the impact he has on these guys. Like Robert Williams, he's the reason why Al's the reason why he had a good game. So I just, you know, he's just so valuable. He really is. And it's just, it's good to have. Let's get to some of these calls here because I want to go to Vish real quick if you don't mind. He happens to live in Melrose, I believe. Let's see what he's got to say. It's Lou and Christian. What's up, Vish?
Hey, how are you guys?
Good. What's going on, pal?
So my daughter goes to Lincoln Elementary in Melrose. Yep. And this is about the Halloween, the celebration. They are switching focus to inclusive for the fall celebration.
Yes.
Look, man, I haven't break the news to my kid, but she's going to be pretty disappointed when she can wear the Halloween costume to this Friday.
How old is she?
She's 10.
She's 10. What's her costume going to be?
She's going to be a bad girl.
A bad girl?
No, Batgirl.
Bat girl. Batgirl. You know what? Good for her. Hope she should enjoy that costume. I mean, she can't wear it to school. She should put it on right after school.
Are you guys fighting this at all? Is any parent fighting this? Is anyone standing up and saying no or what?
Yeah, so there is like some parents. There's a group of parents already started a petition. I think there is like more than 1,000 signatures on it. And the town has a Halloween celebration on their Friday afternoon, so I'm just wondering what the mayor has to say about this.
Ooh. Yeah. So how are you? I mean, you're not looking forward to telling your daughter about this, right? I mean, it's Halloween. It's fun. It's candy, right?
I mean, at some point I had to break the news because, look, I'm from Sri Lanka. Right? I came here 20 years ago.
Yep.
It's the greatest, one of the greatest kids' holidays, right? I mean, who doesn't like candy? Who doesn't like costumes?
I'm with you. I
mean, who doesn't like candy? Honestly,
I mean, this should be punishable by law. Anybody who want to cancel Halloween?
I hear you.
Vish, I'm liking you, buddy. Yeah, so in your neighborhood, though, it's like, it's not, like they're not banning it in neighborhoods at night, Sunday night, right? Or Saturday, whenever you'd celebrate it.
Absolutely no. It's a kid-friendly town. And listen, that's cool, right? That my daughter goes, we have the Indian Hindus. Every kid celebrates Halloween. I mean, so this should be a national holiday.
Well, then thanks for the call, Vish. I mean, obviously, it's offending somebody. Somebody with a loud voice who, you know, whatever, the superintendent apparently doesn't want to hear from anymore and is just giving into it.
Yeah. Yeah, because I don't think your childhood.
Don't think it's inclusive memories. When you exclude 98% of your student population. Like, to me, that's not inclusive. You know, I don't get it. Let's go to Zach and Swansea. What's Zach got going on? It's all about big deal, no big deal. Zach, what's up, buddy?
Residual effect here. Zach, you around?
Zach, are you there? Wow, that's good talk.
I'll bring it up. So he's saying that Alec Baldwin is the producer of the movie Rust. Therefore, I'm assuming he bears more liability for the accident because he's the he's not just an actor that was hired to obviously act. He's actually,
would that be the producer or the director that probably has
neither?
Yeah, I was going
to
say
neither.
Like, who
is
it?
It's like props.
It's your special effects crew.
Yeah, special effects. Tell them, Ryan.
That's their job. They're in charge to set all this stuff and not take a handgun off set and screw around with it, which is the most irresponsible thing I think I have ever heard.
Well,
in my
there
life.
Will be a wrongful death suit filed, and every single person will be named. in this wrongful death.
There will be. I mean, there will be. I mean, somebody died, you know.
No, it's just I know.
But people have taken a lot of, you know, I don't know, they're happy about it. They want to see Alec Baldwin.
No, they want to talk about Alec Baldwin.
Because they don't like his politics. Yeah. And I would say, you know, you don't have to like his politics to realize kind of this thing was an accident. And I feel bad for the guy. You know, I think it's awful. Obviously, he knew this woman, and a lot of people knew this woman. I just feel awful for him. But.
You know, when you talk about this, the Celtics real quick before we move on, you know, just looking at some numbers as far as, you know, how it went for them. You know, so they had 12 points in the final 9 minutes and 30 seconds. And they didn't score at all in the final 2 minutes and 55 seconds of overtime. That was the Celtics, and they held the Charlotte to scoreless. You know, but I do love this attitude, this whole 9 out of 10. I love the fact that Smart called timeout instead of shooting it. You know, I love the fact that he obviously impacts the game. The question is always going to be, and I don't think it's ever going away. It's not going away. This will be a discussion in January,
yes,
in February, and in March. Yes. So how do you deal with it?
Well, I would say that there's going to be some learning moments for Smart, and
no, you know, no, he's no, like no, the no. leader. They already paid him. He's not
but he's the
anywhere.
Leader of this basketball team. So he takes 9 threes. I think you can eliminate 4 or 5 of them, and get him down to 4 or 5 a game. You know, at least 2 or 3 times I saw this guy kind of, you know, back following up the court, and within 6 seconds they throw it back to him at the top of the key, and he's chucking up threes. So I think there's some moments where they could say, okay, 6 seconds into shot clock, Marcus, is not when we want it. The other one is eliminating this two-man game at the end of quarters and halves and games where you're obviously setting up a play for Marcus Smart to shoot. You know, how many times you see Jason Tatum get the ball on the top of the key and he goes right, and the only guy in the wing he has to kick it out to is Marcus Smart. And it's like you are creating plays to get this guy to shoot the basketball. You know, he can eliminate 3 or 4 of these shots a game by stop doing that. And it just makes you wonder. I know Vegas has this over-under wins at 45.5. Last year they were 36 and 36. Remember, it was only 72 games. So back to the full schedule this year. I think they're a better team than they were last year. And I've said this before because I think they actually have players 6 through 10 now. You know, I know a couple of the rookies, I get it, but still Horford's there, Richardson's there. They feel like they're a deeper team, you know, than they were last year, and I think that helps them win games. And if they finish games the way they did yesterday, taking it to the basket, not just settling for desperation threes, I think they'll win more games. I still like them in that 46-47 range, just over. That's what I would say. I think they're going to be much better than they were last year.
Okay.
I don't know what people think about that. Let's go to Mike in the car. He wants to talk about Halloween in Melrose. What's up, Mike?
Hey, regarding this whole Halloween thing, yeah. They do toys for tots, they do coat drives, they do food drives. Why don't they just do a costume collection from people that have them at home and then let the kids pick from those? I mean, it seems like a no-brainer.
Yeah, but it's not about getting a costume.
You think it has more to do with maybe families not affording a costume, because I think the community would help out with that. I don't think that's it. I think there's religious reasons. I don't know what group there are. I mean, it's such a diverse area, you know, in different towns. I know Framingham as well. And they've got rid of Halloween as well on Friday in Framingham.
Is it the diabetics driving this thing? Is that what all this?
I don't know.
Yeah, right.
You got to get rid of the sugar
and all the blood levels and bring them down.
Yeah.
No. Yes. No.
I don't know, Mike. I don't know. But I know that it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate because they just taking away a holiday like Halloween. I thought that was going to be safe. Halloween. That was going to be safe.
Real quick, though, the one thing I did. So, you know, before we get to break, so just watching that game last night. Tatum looks like a grown adult now.
Yep.
Like size wise, he still kind of flops around on the ground too much. Anytime anybody gets barely touched, they overdo it and they fall on the ground. And they have a hard time getting up. Whatever. But last year when he was basically getting punked by Kevin Durant, and I said, okay, this is a grown man playing basketball. You can't sit there and look to the refs for help and advice because somebody a bigger, you know, more accomplished guy is bullying you and challenging you to see if you'll stand up to it. I don't think that happens this year. Like, I just don't think. I think he understands. He played with those guys. Now that there's a different level of respect. You know, I don't think he's going to be intimidated by any of those guys anymore. Nope. I think that's huge.
No, I think it is big. And I also think, you know, we haven't even talked about the murder that was on the court last night.
What was that?
Jalen Brown, Miles Bridges. Yeah. Like it was just there was like a death.
Yeah, does his knees look hurt?
On the court. No, it didn't. You know, it looked beautiful. But I will say this, as much as I love that dunk, I thought there was an and one. You know, I thought there was like an and one on the other end of this because, you know, it was still kind of like a tight game. And he dunks, and Tatum's screaming, and Robert Williams is there screaming, and I'm like, all right, good, you know, 3-point play. And it wasn't. And they threw the ball down the court and hit a wide open three. Like, there was, it was a 3-on-1 the other way. And I'm like, I love the dunk, don't get me wrong.
Posturing is too much.
But the three of them kind of all together, like screaming at each other while it's a 3-on-1 the other way.
And they're flexing.
Say hello.
Yeah, they're flexing like crazy.
Everybody's flexing.
And so
it would have been fine if there was a foul, but there wasn't a foul.
Yeah, the guy that's kind of aware of what's going on, the clever guy grabs the ball,
and
chucks it down the court.
It's a 3-on-1, a wide open
three.
Because
they're just too busy flexing.
And they just happen to miss it. Oh, my God. All right, listen, what do we got? We got the Patriots.
Yeah, I want to get into this this locker room sound. I feel like there's some more clues.
A lot of people feeling good.
Oh, yeah, the entire
feeling
team.
Good about this team. Well, we'll talk Pats and maybe what to expect and what we saw. What to expect this weekend. Are the Patriots down there, are they feeling too good and why? We'll do it next.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
All right, fellas, here's a really good chance for us to start believing in some of the stuff we're doing. Don't turn the ball over. It's a good place to start. Scored on 9 of 10 possessions offensively. Yock, stiff arming. All right, making plays in a passing game. All right, defensively, turn the ball over, getting vertical in the pocket, knocking the ball out of there. It's a great fumble at the end of the game. Just keep playing. Fellas, Cody,
of course,
five tackles. I'm just telling you, one day at a time, you can see the results of it. You just got to keep stacking them together.
Bill Belichick post-game in that big blowout win against the Jets. Everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Good. Stiff arm.
You know it's a good
Davis,
game.
Cody, yeah, five tackles.
Oh, yeah. How about the guy who's barking in the background? Who do we think is barking? Can't even do it right now. There's somebody's. That's when you know things are going well. When there's a guy that's, instead of like cheering or clapping, he's like, no, we're going to bark.
What do I think? It's like a corner. Like, you know, we're dogs.
It's a little, that's what it is.
We're dogs.
We're a pack of wolves out there.
Dude, J.C. Jackson, he's a dog. I don't know, barking it up. But
yeah, but isn't that kind of,
to me, it's like, Bill kind of sounded like, you know, like me, like after a, you know, 12U baseball game out in right field, everybody's sitting down. You know, great job.
Hey, gather around, guys.
You know, Dav, you did a great job getting hit by that pitch. You know, you, oh my God, you hit the cutoff when you threw it in, and you, on that pass ball, you were aware and you went to second. You got to go to every single kid and talk about how great everybody was, right?
Yeah, everybody is praised for like the smallest achievement.
Cody.
We know
tackles. Yeah. Special teams.
Stiff arming.
Hey, Cody, nobody knows your last name. They didn't even know you were on the team. And you went out there and got five tackles.
Cody, five tackles.
Yeah, five tackles. Listen, that is what it seems like to me.
Is that what it's like?
I get
You're in there. Did you single out guys? Because, you know, like in meeting, you know, like tomorrow or whatever, he'll address the media and you'll ask him about so-and-so's game. By the way, Cody Davis was great. I think everyone was great.
Yeah.
Well, how about Jakob Johnson with that? I thought there was a lot of good runs. Like, he won't single anybody out.
Yeah.
But after the game in the locker room, is that when he goes around and singles everybody out, usually?
No, but no.
So
this is why, okay, they've had a rough go of it.
Yeah.
They've lost some close games, just some crappy teams and some good game and some good teams. But they've come on the short end of the stick. So to me, this is all about confidence. This is all about believing in yourself. This is all about, you know, turning the page and moving on and accomplishing what we want to accomplish. This is all about taking this energy and this win and taking it out west against the Chargers, because you're going to need it. You're going to need to believe in yourself, guys. You're going to need to all kind of like pull the wagon in the same direction. Like, so yes, let's overdo it. Everybody gets a ribbon. Everybody gets a trophy today. Like, nobody got the day off. It wasn't a victory Monday, which usually happens in those types of situations. But that's why I'm sitting there going, they knew it. So they picked on the lowly, pitiful Jets, right? Because every time anyone says anything about this win, they always dismiss the win by saying, well, it is the Jets. It's like, compliment, it is the Jets. Hey, great job here and there, it is the Jets. 9 of 10 possessions, but it was the Jets. It's almost like, okay, you can't really count it. Like, your three wins are against the three worst teams in the NFL. Like, so there's got to be...
Well, it just makes... That's why I ask you, like, is that kind of, you know, singling guys out, achievements, talking like that after games? Is that... That's you saying that that's not necessarily normal. It's just like, great team effort today, whatever, whatever, normal.
No.
So he's singling guys out. So it kind of sounds a lot more like how he was last year with Cam. You know, because he knew he had to build his confidence.
Self-worth was in the toilet.
But you know what I mean? Yeah, he knew that he had to build his confidence. So it's like almost like this team is going through that same thing. And this is why I say it was a good win for them. Because individually...
I'm not saying it wasn't a bad win.
I know, but some of these guys individually needed a confidence boost. As a group, maybe they needed to see that W finally, rather than losing games late. The L's were, you know, they're adding up. So, you know, I think there's a lot of that. He's trying to build this group's confidence up, because right now, he said 2-4, everyone's down. Everyone's like, 2-4, we suck.
Yeah, I don't see the whole, like, hey, this win isn't impressive, this win doesn't mean anything. No, of course it does. But I don't think it solved any of their problems. I don't think that suddenly the team is not going to jump off sides, or suddenly they're going to figure out, you know, how many men are on the field at the same time.
Yeah, because I think there are some, you know, leadership stuff. You know, we talk about the leaders of this team. Devin McCourty's one of them. He's talked in the past about how, like, we got to stop acting like we've accomplished something, like we're the Patriots of the past. You know, we got to start playing better football. This was him after that Dallas game on that CD Lamb final touchdown.
We're in a tough call, I think, for the route they ran. They dialed up a good play for what we tried to do, kind of situational football. What they like to do, we tried to take it away. Dak was able to hold it for another second. We kind of took the first two reads, the two tight ends, to the flat.
All right, that's all. I just want the beginning of it. You know, we had a tough call.
Yeah.
For that play. Like, you get caught sometimes on defense, right? Or is he just saying, like, yeah, we didn't have the right call on that? I don't know what we were doing.
No, it seems he followed up by being situational. No, they had the wrong call. Like, they had the wrong call. They had the wrong guy covering, you know, this Dallas Cowboys receiver, CeeDee Lamb. That's what put him in such a predicament. That was from after the Dallas Cowboys
after game. After the Cowboy game. And it seemed kind of like an innocent comment. You're just like, yeah, we had the wrong call. It happens. But then Albert Breer, you know, even before that Jets game, you know, was talking about some of the things he had heard. This was Albert Breer on NBC.
Listening to what Devin McCourty said last week, you can kind of see it. Normally, these things that get taken care of but behind closed doors. But seeing Devin McCourty publicly talk about the state of the team, I think at least set off some alarm bells down there. And there is a feeling that I've gotten from some people, from some newcomers coming into the team, that maybe it wasn't as tight an operation as they expected it to be. And I think the question is going to become now whether some of the older guys who aren't what they were on the field, guys like Dante Hightower, Devin McCourty, Kyle Van Noy, are able to get through to the younger guys.
Newcomers,
what does that mean?
Are surprised because it's not as tight as they thought it was going to be. And I don't think tight meaning like emotions. I think tight as far as the little things, attention to detail, or just the winning.
Yeah, that's it. Hey, wait, I thought we were supposed to win here. Why are we 2-4? Why is everybody so miserable? Like, I get it. I knew it was going to be tough, but aren't we supposed to win? Isn't the winning kind of worth the cruddiness that exists during the week?
Yeah, see, I look at a guy like Hunter Henry, who I think is hopefully going to become another leader, right? Young. A lot of these free agents are young. Like Judon, that to me is like you're actually building a new core through free agency. You know, because I don't know if that core is coming through the draft. Like, I don't know if Duggar or Uche or Bentley, you know, are like the new, you know, if those guys are the new Hightowers and the new McCourtys. You know,
they, almost, they are. I think they are.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I don't think they're ready year two, year one, why, year why two, not, year though? Three.
Why not?
Because I don't think Devin McCourty was that guy until about year four or five.
Yeah, but
I don't think Hightower was that guy until Mayo left.
These are already established guys. Judon's established. Hunter Henry's been a captain.
But what I'm saying is, like, so
Chargers.
Hunter Henry's over at the Chargers, and he might be what he's talking about. Like, I'm surprised he's not as tight as I thought, because he's like, man, I'm in San Diego, you know, or L.A. the last year or so, and we had a really good team. And we just kept losing by less than a touchdown. You know, we had seasons where we started off 2-4 and should have been 4-2. We just made mistakes. I didn't believe our coach was overmatched. And I don't think the coach is the problem here, like the head coach at least. But I came here to kind of take care of little things, to win these games, not lose them late like I used to. You know, Jalen Mills out in Philadelphia, you know, just watching the way they go about it and lose games, right? And they come here and they're all like, well, yeah, I signed here. Or even out in Oakland, you know, Aguilar. And I thought it was going to be different. Like, I just thought we were going to do the little things to win, you know, not give away three games like we maybe have.
Yeah,
like we battle
is,
all the way. I expect it to be tighter than it is right now.
No, well, see, yeah, I thought it was. I thought they're going to be more disciplined. I thought we wouldn't have the same problem that all these other teams have. I thought we wouldn't lose close games. I thought we would win close games.
See, I just wonder, like, the leaders, you know, like your offensive leaders, James White, he's done for the year.
He's one of them.
Yeah, you know, your defensive leader is Dante Hightower. He's not the same player who didn't play last week. Devin McCourty is probably the most impactful veteran on this team right now, and it might be his last year. You maybe think Matthew Slater on special teams is the leader, and he can be, but it might be his last year. You know, and then you start looking at, you know, Bill Belichick is a great coach, but how many first, second-year coaches does he have on this staff? You talk about positional coaches, like tight ends and offensive lines. Like, Scar's not here anymore, and it's like, okay, this is what we do. And these guys are like, yeah, I thought it'd be tighter. Like, a lot of position coaches would be better. There'll be more attention and more detail. I think we make these mistakes, and we are. I just think he spread himself so damn thin, not only with a new roster and young players through the draft the last couple years, but the coaching staff. He's had turnover like this before, but I don't know. Did he get lucky, or did he just have great coaches waiting in the wings? And are these coaches up to that level that the ones that have come here in the past, the last 4 or 5 years?
So we did some investigative research.
Deep investigation.
Oh, yeah, it was tough. I mean, we're talking about, you know, pixel, you know, manipulation to kind of figure out exactly who the Barker was. I'm not going to tell you who it is right now. You have to sell some soap. I'm going to come back. I'm going to tell you who the Barker is. I think you'll be surprised.
You will be very surprised when we tell you who
it is. And then I want to take this one call, too.
Well, we'll take him next, after the break, too, because I want to talk to him, and I want callers, and I want to find out who the Barker is. And we got last call. Who's the Barker? We'll tell you next. All right, who's the Barker? I want to know who the Barker is.
Who is it?
Give me a multiple choice. How'd you guys figure this out? You're matching things?
Well, we don't have to reveal our sources here, but we did a deep investigation into some social media posts by the @Patriots, the official Instagram of the New England Patriots. And here are your four choices to the question, who was the Barker in the post-game Patriots? All right, so we'll go with choice A, David Andrews, a Georgia Bulldog alum.
Okay.
We'll go with choice B, our guy, Mac Jones, our Monday 2:30 guest.
Okay.
Choice C, J.J. Taylor, 5'6", 185. That would be a Barker, right, Christian?
I feel like it's a trick, though. So, because I feel like you're trying to trick me.
Yeah, you're trying to lead the witness.
I'm going to go. You got another
one? Fourth?
Or how about D. Miles Bryant, a candidate you guys suggested at 5'9", 185.
Who's the first one?
So your choice is David Andrews, Mac Jones, J.J. Taylor, or Miles Bryant.
I'm going to go with Miles Bryant.
I'm going to go with the Joker.
You're going with
Mac Jones.
Was that even an option?
Mac Jones is the second option. I think he's the Barker.
It's not a real option. Go ahead, who is it?
Well, let's hear what Mac Jones does when he comes out to the field.
Let's go!
What?
That is Mac Jones.
Mac Jones is a Barker.
Stop it.
So Tom Brady's got the LFG, Mac Jones got the Let's Go, and the
Never.
Are you kidding me?
It's our guy.
Life. What a psychopath!
Well, quarterback question of the week.
Oh, we know that's
going
to be next week.
Are you a Barker?
Do you like worry? You bark.
Why I want you to barking? Listen to this sound, Mac. Is this you in the background barking?
Let's go!
Oh, my God.
That is Mac, an owner of a multi-poo, by the way.
Exactly. Mac, what kind of dog are you trying to emulate?
It's a multi-poo.
Oh, okay.
His dog barks like
an aggressive multi-poo.
Hey, dog doesn't even bark.
Let me go to Jeremy real quick. Right. Jeremy says he works, he's from L.A., and he works in the industry. Jeremy, go ahead. You're on with Lou and Christian.
Yeah, I grew up in Worcester. I've lived out here for about 20 years working in the business.
So what can you tell us?
Property is Well, look, this to call this thing a Hollywood production is a huge stretch. This is some rogue production out in the desert with half the union crew quit because they weren't paying them.
Oh, wow.
Everything I've heard about this has been wrong. Every single thing they've done is done improperly. They hired a child who looks like she should be working at Starbucks to be their armorer. There should never be a live bullet on a set ever, under any circumstance, ever. It's so taboo, it's just mind-boggling. The first AD, the assistant director, grabbed the gun off of the cart. That gun should be in a locked safe under the armorer's control until the very moment when it's being used. And then they pull the gun out. They take control of the set. The first AD steps away. The armorer's in control of the set. They open up the gun. They show the crew. They show the actor. It's empty. Here's the blanks. This is what the blanks look like. The first AD grabbed a gun off of a cart where it never should have been. He never should have touched it and hands it to an actor during a rehearsal who points it at a crew member who shouldn't even be there. She should be operating a remote. It's a digital camera. This isn't a 35-millimeter camera. You need an operator and a focus puller. It's completely insane that it happened. I take it so personally. Everybody in my business is just broken over this thing.
Jeremy, how do you react?
Everybody's talking about how they should regulate the whole business and do this all on computers now. We don't do things like that. This is some crack crew in New Mexico has no idea what they're doing.
How culpable is Alec Baldwin in all this, then?
Baldwin, the actor, is completely blameless. He's an idiot, but he's blameless. Alec Baldwin, if he's the executive producer, depending on how this thing shakes out with all the details, should absolutely be charged with the crime with the armor and the AD because they're the ones that hired these people who have no idea what they're doing and put them in a position to get somebody killed.
Yeah, well, if he's the producer, I guess everyone's going to be listed as in this wrong.
So this is affecting the whole industry out there. Is that what you're saying too?
Oh my God, yeah. Like it's the worst. We have a very serious protocol for all firearms because of what happened to Brandon Lee like 25, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Everybody in my craft has to take the entertainment firearm safety course, whether or not you're ever going to be an armorer or not. So anyone who just even handles props or even like set dressing has to know about how to handle an entertainment firearm. For there to even be a gun anywhere near the set, I just read that they found a bunch of live ammo in a fanny pack on the set. They were just out there in the desert having a good time thinking they were hot shots working on a big movie with Alec Baldwin that doesn't even have any money. And they got somebody killed because they're playing hot.
Have you heard of this before? This, what's it called? Plinking? I don't even know what the hell.
I'm not a gun guy.
But nah, it's just this.
All right, Jeremy, thanks for the call.
Wow, that is.
I mean, you got to think like lawsuits as far as like, amazing. You know, regulations that weren't followed, protocol that wasn't followed. Oh, I mean, off the charts.
Everything
right?
He said there is 100% true. I go back to, I cannot believe that gun ever left the set.
The name I was talking about is the armor.
Yes.
That's the name of the guy that handles the guns and like doesn't take them out to the last second. They're in a lockbox and, hey, listen, look at this. Make sure everybody. I wouldn't even touch the thing now. If I'm an actor, I'd be freaking the hell out.
That is something he alluded to when he mentioned Brandon Lee. Brandon Lee died, son of Bruce Lee, during the filming of The Crow 25 years ago because of the mishandling of gun and not removing the primers from the charges. So now you do actually have a specialist in play. It used to just be special effects crew.
Just this some is your dude. Stuff.
Now they have somebody in charge of it.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, this hour of the MFers is brought to you by Northeast Men's Health with locations in Dedham next to Legacy Place and in Salem, New Hampshire, or online at northeastmenshealth.com.
Let's go!
I'm amazed. That is probably the best investigative work I think I've ever seen.
Well, it's ironic because you know who that let's go kind of sounds like?
Wake up! Let's go!
Yes! Tyler!
Mr. Brightside!
We did not give that enough attention last week. We did not. We actually dropped the ball on
that. Got the wrong guy. Not me.
That is beautiful.
What are we doing right now?
Last call. It's brought to you by Cars for Kids. The easy way to donate your car. You can donate today and your car can be picked up tomorrow. Go to carsforkids.com. We'll give them a call at 1-877-CARS-FOR-KIDS. Thank you, Tyler. A lot of Halloween talk, a lot of candy talk. We found out, Mike Leach does not like candy corn.
He does not, no.
At all. So we found out another local athlete, prominent athlete, doesn't like candy corn at all either. Nick Foligno talking to Pasta, David Pastrnak.
Try a few of those. Well, just like one or two, but six. You can't have one. It's like, you can't just have one. It's like Lay's. I'll have them with you. Carly, you want to join in?
Nope.
That's terrible.
No, it's not.
Nice. Where can I drop this?
You didn't even eat it.
Buddy, I'm chewing on it.
Chew it. Badly. Enjoy it. Take the flavors in. Come on. You know you love it. We're best friends.
You like that?
I don't like it.
David Postnoff does not like candy corn.
Candy corn is nasty. How did that become the official candy of Halloween?
Yeah, but there's something about
candy
corn.
That's what they need to change. Don't get rid of Halloween. To change the candy.
What about the 2% of people that enjoy candy corn?
But see, candy corn is like, it's like the strangest candy. Because I don't even enjoy it. But you have one, you're like, I'll have another one.
I don't. Not me. I think it's disgusting.
One more. You know, but it's, I don't like it.
It's gross. Candy corn is disgusting. I don't know how, like, pick a good candy. You know what it is? Somebody's grandmother grabbed some cheap candy, put it out on a dish during October, and next thing you know, all the kids are like, well, I guess that's what we're supposed to do. Cheap candy, it's gross.
Candy corn.
I'm throwing it. Listen, you give me candy corn. I'm throwing it.
All right,
in
what do we got tomorrow? We got Alex Cora on, I believe.
We should have
should
Alex.
Should be his last appearance.
Yeah,
last
Rodney Harrison, too, correct? Yeah.
Yes.
We'll talk to him at 4:30. We'll have that all dialed up for you tomorrow at 2. Have a good night, everybody.
Later.
We'll see you then.
Let's go!
Hoo, hoo, hoo!
The destination for breaking Patriots news and reaction is EEI. Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.